Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds Like Comics, the podcast devoted to all things comic books in movies and TV. I'm Luke.
And I'm Jay. Welcome to the podcast.
Today's topic, GoldenEye, the 17th in the James Bond series produced by Eon Productions and the first to star Pierce Brosnan as James Bond. This is your warning. We will be talking spoilers.
God, this was massive when I was young.
Oh, mate, the same. 1995, GoldenEye, on the big screen, Nintendo 64.
Like, yes.
The game was absolutely massive. And of course, this movie also had a tie-in comic book. This is the first James Bond film to be reviewed by Sounds Like Comics. And as I said in the opening there, it's the 17th in the James Bond films produced by Eon Productions. And I thought how fun it would be to focus on Pierce Brosnan, start with GoldenEye, and he did four movies. Work our way through his films because, wow, what a moment in time. Pierce Brosnan as James Bond, for me, it's the first time where I was watching new James Bond. We probably both grew up on James Bond. I remember as a kid, I really enjoyed the Roger Moore movies because they're a bit sillier. You had the car in The Spy Who Loved Me that went underwater. You had a supervillain in Jaws, all that silly stuff. But it had been around and I'd seen them like from start to finish or just bits when it was on TV. But as a new film, Pierce Brosnan onwards, I'd watch all the James Bond films. So although we're talking 1995, I remember this being new James Bond and I was there for it.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I'd grown up mostly with just the Sean Connery films, always having had a love for Goldfinger, always loving the classic Aston Martin DB5, Odd Job, all of that stuff.
Odd Job, yeah.
And so being so familiar with that stuff, I had watched the odd Roger Moore ones. I think I'd seen just one of the Timothy Dalton ones by 95. They weren't on as regularly as a kid here in Australia as all of the others. Like, we had plenty. Roger Moore, they used to quite regularly, like once every couple of years, to like work their way through the Roger Moore films. And every now and like yearly, you'd get the Sean Connery ones come through. So never had any trouble with those. But yeah, this was the first time that people my age were like, hey, we've got a James Bond. We've got one, a new one.
And that's like, yeah.
I hadn't heard of Pierce Brosnan before James Bond. It wasn't until much later on, they're like, oh yeah, before Bond, he'd had a huge career in England. I'm like, really?
And
I'd never heard his name before.
He had that show, Remington Steele, where he would wear the tux. And apparently, they wanted Brosnan before Timothy Dalton, but Brosnan was tied up with that TV contract and he wasn't available. Those two Timothy Dalton films are very good. The Living Daylights, which is like a proper big action movie, and then License to Kill.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's a podcast that I've been listening to, Die Hard on a Blank. And it's all the films that have come out since Die Hard, where it's like Die Hard on a bus, Speed, Die Hard on a battleship, Under Siege. You know, so it's all those movies. But they review, as part of that series, License to Kill. And there's a point to it, because that very much is like an American action movie, but it's James Bond. But similar to a Die Hard movie. So those two Dalton movies I do really like. And as serious as they were, for me, from memory at least, GoldenEye was like, this is it. This is serious Bond. No more Roger Moore. Like, you know, wearing his safari pantsuits or whatever he was wearing in one of his later films. This is it. This is cool. This is serious. But then you sit down and you do a rewatch. and were first introduced to James Bond is hanging upside down from a vent, flashes a grin, beg your pardon, forgot to knock. And then 007 punches out the Soviet who sat on the toilet. I remember it being more serious than this recent rewatch.
I'm right there with you. I recall it being like modern and like a bit clean, a better update. But on this rewatch, having, you know, watched all of the Daniel Craig ones, I'm like, wow, these are not as I remember. I don't, like, these are comical. Like, these are proper, like, almost every single one of his lines of dialogues or one-liner or cheesy in some way. Super sexualized. I don't remember him being quite so horny.
I mean, James Bond has always been horny, to be fair.
Yeah, he has. And he was always like the womanizer, but I didn't recall it to such a massive degree. Maybe because I'm so much more familiar with the Sean Connery ones. Or maybe because the later ones weren't quite so severely like over the top as this first one, you know, because they're kind of finding their feet with a new actor and everything else. And there'll be always big gaps between the Pierce Brosnan films. I remember that.
That's true, like, actually. And that's also the same with Daniel Craig. Like, if you look, like, he's been playing Bond over 10 years. Or he had been playing Bond. But then you look at the time between his films. But it was interesting, I mean, with this one, like, it was 6 years between Dalton and Brosnan. And that was due to legal disputes, things going on behind the scenes. But then eventually, of course, Dalton didn't come back and we got Brosnan. But what's interesting with this movie and Daniel Craig's first movie, Casino Royale, same director, Martin Campbell.
Yeah.
He started Brosnan and he came back and he started Craig. But it is funny. It's like, we're both agree then. So you're watching Pierce Brosnan. This is serious Bond. Years later, Daniel Craig. No, this is serious Bond. And then we're going to get another Bond next. It's going, oh, wow. This is serious Bond. But I do think Daniel Craig is going to be a tough one to beat, but we're not here to talk about Daniel Craig. We're here to talk about Pierce Brosnan in this movie, right, which really surprised me when I looked at the budget. 60 million. How insane is that? Like,
at the time, that was a fairly large budget, though. Like, most action movies were fitting around that time. It's not until, like, I want to say Titanic. When Titanic was like, oh my God, this movie cost, was at the time like 150 million?
Right. And that was massive. But I guess it's like, just,
how could a movie be so expensive? And I remember, like, it was rare to break 100 million. So right,
but I guess it's just comparing to like movies now. I mean, they're not making a James Bond movie for 60 million now. I mean, looking at this movie in 95. And then last year, we got a $300 million Flash movie. It's like, what has happened? Like, of course, there's a lot more special effects in a Flash movie. But at the same time, I don't know. It takes me aback. But $60 million was the budget. Box office, $356.4 million. Huge. I mean, they were absolutely going to be bringing Brosnan back, weren't they? On the back of that.
But yeah, they did so many intelligent things. I mean, you get Sean Bean as your villain.
Oh, mate.
Incredibly smart move.
006.
He's so good. He's so slick. This is the Sean Bean as I always think of him. It's that this era Sean Bean. Like, the youthfulness, he often played villains. There was a sharpness and a danger to him. And he's every much Bond's equal. In this film, like, he's intelligent, he's driven, he's dangerous. Like, you actually feel that, which is impressive given the somewhat corny nature of so much of the rest of the film with the dialogue, like even little bits. He gets picked up by when he gets to Russia by that American CIA agent, and his car breaks down, and he's doing like the fixing it, and then eventually he just hits the motor with the sledgehammer, and off they go. I'm like, it's almost slapstick, like in some of the bits and pieces. One thing I want to point out before we go to the other actors is the way this is shot. Like I think Martin Campbell's a phenomenal director. I mean, also we've already reviewed, but Mask of Zorro, like one of the best adventure superhero movies ever shot. Like,
oh, fantastic.
Casino Royale is phenomenally well shot. The guy knows how to shoot a film, but just the color palette and shot choices and that kind of stuff, very different to like modern cinema. I've actually, my friend pointed this out to a friend who's like, oh, I want to look, things from the 80s and 90s had such a different look. I'm like, you know what, like that's, if you're on that kind of a bent right now, this really does show you the difference of like, you can watch like a Daniel Craig Bond and watch this one, and just simply the color and shot composition is miles apart. They're so different. There's such a nostalgia to this style. The women have an ethereal look. You've got Zenya Onatoff, Famke Janssen, but they, like the way the light bounces off them in the camera, they're not using a soft lens to like blur it, but there is almost a glow about them when they're on screen. They really pop on an almost comic panel level. Really well shot. Like everyone on this, the makeup artists, the cinematography, the lighting, because they didn't have color correction at the time to like digitally turn up your colors and your contrast to like super like saturated levels.
So they had to get it right in camera. Yeah. And there's a craft.
Add something to that.
Honestly, 90s cinema. Looking back on it now, I've got such a strong appreciation for 90s cinema, thrillers, action movies. Yeah. Really enjoying going back and watching them. You quickly said the character's name, and then obviously you had a point to make, so that's fine. We need to go back to Zenya Onatopp. What an incredible name. What a very James Bond femme fatale name.
Yeah.
Zenya Onatopp.
She always did like a good squeeze.
There we go. And oh, wow. What a great character. She's got that whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, very like psychotic, enjoys killing. Cackles as she does so. She likes
to fight.
And it's
in her eyes and all of that. So she's a great character. And, you know, talking about Sean Bean already for England, like James.
Trevelyan.
For me. You know, the big showdown at the end.
Yeah.
And their relationship is so good. Like that shorthand, you know, I really like that, you know, and disposable. You know, double O agents are disposable, you know, worth more than that. So although you don't want to side with a bad guy, like you've got Alec Trevelyan and he's doing what he's thinking is right. And it's like, well, he doesn't see a future for himself if he stays a double O. So, okay, I kind of see his point. And then you've got Bond, who is the good soldier. So it's interesting. It's not just like cartoon villains. There's depth to these characters.
Yeah, he also as the other the main female love interest, you get Natalia Simonova, played by Isabella Skorupko. I think this might be the first time I heard the name Natalia, and it just so strongly like cemented it to me as like a Russian name. So, like, when I got to reading comics with Black Widow in it, she was a Natalia. My brain was like, of course she is. Of course she is. But she isn't like a military. She is very much a damsel. She's intelligent, but she's, like, you know, she's out of her depth. She's the brains.
She's not your typical Bond girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I appreciate even to this day. I mean, I did put in many hours to the N64 game, so the sets, especially where the GoldenEye satellite initial bases. Like, I don't know how many times, every time I look at that, it's just pure nostalgia of like, I remember running this mission like on the game. It looks fantastic. The set design's great. She's great. She's very convincing with her. She never drops her accent. And, you know, she's in there with Boris, Alan Cumming.
Oh,
one of the most British people there ever was playing a Russian hacker.
Yeah, well, Scottish. Yeah, I first noticed him in a film where he was blue, X-Men 2.
Yes, same.
And then started recognizing him in other things. But yeah, he's a bit of a sleazeball in this, the geeky computer programmer, and he's later revealed to be a bad guy. So he's working for the other side.
Yeah. Watching this, man, did it remind me of the guy from Jurassic Park, played by Newman.
That's right, Wayne Knight.
Yeah, like they're both hackers. They're both somewhat sleazy. They both turn out to be the like part of the bad guys. I'm like, but a lot of the stereotypes were there. Like, this was very much the 90s idea of what a hacker was. You know, like a somewhat counterculture, way smarter than everyone else in the room and wants everyone to know. Like, it was very, I just was struck by the similarities in the characterizations, especially because one's a British film, one's an American film, but they both have the exact same idea of what a hacker was. Yeah, just quite interesting. And this was the first Bond movie as well to have Judi Dench play M.
And she was that good when they recast Bond and they started again with Casino Royale, they brought her back.
Yeah.
And nobody had any problems with that whatsoever. She is bloody fantastic in this.
Yeah. Yeah. She is. She's like so much so that when they finally bumped her off in Skyfall and brought in the new M, even now I'm like, you could have done with Judi Dench and then just, like, you only had one more in it anyway. Like, you could have really just waited until you had a new Bond. I don't feel the same connection.
It works, though, because you've got Bond suffering that loss. And I thought Ralph Fiennes did a good job of playing the new M. But this movie, though, it's the first. Maybe we'll get to Daniel Craig one day. This movie, it's her playing M for the first time. And she really is brilliant. Like, I mean, Judi Dench, like, she's fantastic in everything.
Yeah, and she has such screen presence. She's like quite a small statured lady, but she doesn't feel it when she's on screen. Like,
no,
she's
easily
intimidating everyone else on set.
Absolutely. Do you want a little bit of drinks trivia?
Yes, absolutely.
Her glass of bourbon is really apple juice with two lumps of light glass passing for ice cubes. Pierce Brosnan drank iced water instead of the famous vodka martini. There you go. That's what they're drinking.
Interesting. I mean, always curious because
it wasn't alcohol, but still, now we know what it was.
Yeah, not flat ginger ale.
Oh, you know who's got a really small part in this? Minnie Driver. There's Irina.
Yes.
The mistress, the singer, such a small role for her.
Yeah, she's just there. It took me out of the movie for a minute. I'm like, is that Minnie Driver? I had to pause and like Google like Minnie Driver, James Bond ? And sure enough, like yeah, she's got a small uncredited role. I'm like, what the hell?
It's really weird, and her character is with Robbie Coltrane.
Yeah, so good. I always like seeing Robbie Coltrane, but
he plays a really good Russian gangster.
He does.
he plays the part well.
Yeah. You shot me in the leg. Like, it still hurts when it gets cold. He's so good. He's necessary. things happen quickly in this movie. Like the pacing, they really jump kind of like, we're doing this scene, they're stealing a helicopter, we're moving to this scene, we're moving to, man, it really has a pace, jumps through because it's runtime. I haven't got written it down, but it's not much more than an hour and a half. It's really efficient in how quickly it moves from one thing to the next.
2 hours, like 10 Robbie minutes.
Really?
It's 2 hours, 10 minutes. And it's interesting that you're saying that because it feels like, I've seen this movie many times now, this most recent one, it kind of feels like it may be the 1 hour 40, 1 hour 45. It's starting to wrap up. And then there's like half an hour more film. And then it just starts back up again.
Yeah.
I felt the length this time, but I've seen it many times. And I watched it again just so it was fresh in my memory for this review. But I definitely felt the length this time. So it's interesting that you thought it was like a 90-minute movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it just, for me, it just seemed to like race by. Maybe it was just because it'd been so long since I watched it, and I was so surprised. Like I remembered Robbie Coltrane was in it, but I'd forgotten that the Mini Driver thing threw me for a loop, and some of the comedy was quite interesting. Like the guy who plays the CIA contact. I don't think I've actually written it down, but he pops up. It felt like he was going to be kind of like Felix.
Well, he's Lighter? Yeah. So he's instead of Felix. So he's Joe Don Baker as Jack Wade, a veteran CIA officer. So he's basically the Felix type character. I think because this was still a shared continuity, even though we'd had different actors playing Bond, until they hit the reset with Daniel Craig, in a previous movie, Felix had died. So that's why they had this other character introduced. So he is playing, like, if Felix would have still been alive, that's who would have been playing or being that character.
Yeah, because does he pop up in any of the future ones? I have to keep an eye out for that because
I've held
it
off.
It really does feel like,
I think he does.
It feels like they've set him up specifically to pop up, to fill that role going forward.
I mean, Tomorrow Never Dies.
Another Day.
Tomorrow Never Dies is next. It's been a while since I've seen that one. Yeah. And The World Is Not Enough. Die Another Day. Yeah. I mean, after we finish this review, I will be going back and doing a rewatch of the other Brosnan movies. Oh, you know what? An actor who has come back, Desmond Llewellyn. Is Q.
Oh, Q.
The head of Q branch. So he kept coming back. It wasn't until the Craig movies where we got a younger Q. But he and was only Q because in all the movies.
Aged out. Like he was he was literally Q all the way up until he took Daniel Craig.
I feel like he was always old, like from memory, like from watching him as a kid. Like, do you know what I mean? Like Q was always like the old guy. Oh, and Bond,
007.
He picks this up. What's this? That's my lunch.
Yeah.
that's a good gag.
Yeah. You know, despite the fact he's renowned his whole life for being Q, the inventor of all these like ingenious gadgets, he's actually kind of a Luddite. He admitted he couldn't even get a VCR to work and he had to call his son around.
Oh, no.
Can you help me with the VCR? It wasn't plugged in.
You broke the illusion.
Yeah. When I found that out, I thought the same thing. I'm like, but your Q, what do you mean you don't know tech? Like, I don't expect you to know like realistic spy gadgets, but general tech, I would have thought you could set up a stereo. Like, what do you mean? Illusion broken? No. Yeah. Quite interesting. Oh, I have so many good memories with this. The music.
Oh, definitely. Oh, the music. Eric Serra, not John Barry, not David Arnold. He is a frequent collaborator of film director Luc Besson. So we're talking The Fifth Element, Leon, The Professional, Nikita. He also did Bulletproof Monk, which we have reviewed already on the podcast. The New arrangement of the James Bond theme used in the opening was disliked by many fans and was replaced by a more traditional version in future movies. So it is different in this movie, but you can still hear it. You can still hear that it's James Bond, but they were obviously looking to distinct themselves from what had come before. But I like it. It works, but it is, it's very subtle though.
Yeah. I like it. To me, it sounds Bond. I can understand them like thinking, oh, no, because that's the typical thing. Like, oh, we want to differentiate ourselves. It always makes me think of the theme song to Star Trek Enterprise. And everyone's like, what are you doing? We have orchestral themes. How dare you put a pop song in there?
That is a weird one, though.
Yeah.
That song.
It's such a far departure.
It really is. You know, I always knew Tina Turner did the title song, but what I didn't know until doing prep for this, the song was written by Bono and the Edge of U2 fame.
I was aware of that.
And I would have seen it in the opening titles over the years, but never really paid much attention to it. But yeah. Because I always just thought Tina Turner, she used the sound.
Yeah. Because I have a vague recollection that they have done a Bond theme in their lives, like recorded, not just written. I don't remember specifically, though.
I don't know, because I'm thinking like male singers on a Bond song, Thunderball, Tom Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, you got Chris Cornell for
Casino Royale.
Yeah,
I think that's it though.
Maybe that's why.
If we want to shout out, Live and Let Bond Die. Though, Paul McCartney.
Guns and Roses.
Yeah, Guns N' Roses, and Paul McCartney did. They did Live and Let Die. It was Wings.
Wings.
Paul McCartney, Wings. Yes. So remember years ago when Paul McCartney came to Perth and he played Live and Let Die live, and it was incredible, like the highlight of the night. But if we just want to give a shout out to a terrible Bond song, Dying of a Day, Madonna. Awful.
Yeah.
That one is awful. This one, though, brilliant. This is really...
Very, very, very Bondish.
It is,
The title sequence... incredibly Bondish. Although, again, I mean, it was the era. Like, again, I was shocked because of I'm so familiar with how they do them these days, and how they've been doing them for a while. Just the that's a whole bunch of naked ladies.
It is.
It's such a whiplash because of how they make modern films. I mean, there's a lot less nudity in modern cinema. Not so much TV. This, like, TV's taken up that mantle.
That's a good point, actually. But in cinema, movies
specifically, it's really like, wasn't expecting that.
And if you look at what they do with the Daniel Craig ones, often it's him topless.
Yeah.
and not women. Yeah. They do a lot of that. But with the opening, computer graphics were used to create the famous gun barrel, making this movie the first James Bond film to use CGI.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And also the opening sequence where they go first person, don't they, when he bungees off the dam?
Oh, man, when he bungees off the dam and the plane's going down and the sound of the engine gets fainter and fainter, and then he comes back up at the last minute. Amazing. It is such a great opening to any Bond movie. I love it.
Yeah. But the bungee, it's so iconic. I think the bungee, this might be my first experience with that as a concept. I'm like, what's he doing? Bungee rope, what is that?
What is that thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the time it came out. But it's always stuck in my head. It still looks great. That was a stuntman who did that, but because the smart use of camera angles, you never see his face. They didn't have to do any extra shot of like, there's Pierce Brosnan in a really poorly wire worked in scene to get what they wanted. Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, really great sequence, classic sequence. Although, anytime I watch this, I just think of scenes from the video game, like when they're stuck on the train and he's trying to cut through the floor with his watch while she is hacking the computer. Like, all I can think is like, quick, D-pad, up, 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 wristwatch, quick, start cutting off the little panels on the floor. I can see it so clearly. But yeah, all great. I forgot about the helicopter on the train looks, watching it this time, I'm like, I remember that train being huge, but it's only like two or three carriages.
Yeah. You know, this movie was credited or is credited with having the largest amount of model and miniature work ever utilized in a James Bond movie. See, it's definitely come out at a time before everything was CGI heavy.
Yeah.
Where they were having to rely on miniatures. And it's just aged so well. A lot of movies from this time really have aged well. But I do think, you know, going back to the video game, just the pairing of the movie coming out and then the video game, that they complemented each other so well, and having it be a first-person shooter as well, where most people could just pick up a controller and just have a go. Like, it was a fun game.
Yeah, yeah. And the tank sequence, iconic. Like, we've shaken him, and he busts through the wall and then pops his head out and, like, straightens his tie. He's just like, oh, and the theme comes blaring in.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. I remember in cinema and that, the trailer came out on and that happened, and I'm just like, what is that? What is happening? Yeah, it's just great. It's so well. The only corny thing is when the statue gets stuck on top of the tank for a little while. That's very 90s for something like that to happen, but they make good use of it, and it's visually striking. Why so many cop cars are chasing him? It's like, dude, it's in a tank. What are you going to do? Like, this isn't modern day where they might have grenade launchers or something, and they're big, heavy SUVs. These are like tiny European sedans chasing this massive tank. You're like, it's just going to run you over, guys. Get out of there.
Yeah, but it's a great sequence. I get what you're saying about the statue, but I'll remind you again about the opening of the movie. Beg your pardon, forgot to knock.
Yeah. First line of the movie. Literally the first line of the movie.
They set the tone. They set the tone early. But we clearly both really like this movie. But if you're going to rate it out of five.
I'm coming in at 4 out of 5. It's not perfect. It's slightly dated. Some of the jokes, the one-liners. I love one-liners, but God, are there a lot in this film. As I said, it feels like every single one of Pierce Brosnan's lines is a one-liner. But it's shot really well. Music's phenomenal. Great cast. Well acted. It's not heavy on the gadgets, which sometimes a Bond movie can be overly reliant on the, like, that sort of stuff. I just think it's just really well put together. It's just slightly dated. I can feel some of the spots that comes through, but thoroughly enjoy, highly recommend. How about yourself?
I agree. It is dated, but because of the use of practical effect and miniatures, it holds up well, and it's a good Bond movie. It's just weird looking back on it now, as it had always been this serious thing. Yeah, it's quite cheesy, but it still works.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, great characters, really fun, you know, femme fatale, you know, Bond character names. Like, Young to come in at it's a solid 4. It really is, but this most recent viewing, I did feel that length. So, like, you thought it was like a 90-minute movie. I did feel like it felt as though it was coming to an end, and then there was like half an hour more movie. But it's a lot of fun. It's really good, and I'm looking forward to continuing with the rest of the Pierce Brosnan movies. But yeah, 4 out of 5. Was that Super episode all about GoldenEye?
If you'd like to contact us about this episode or suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, you can find us on Facebook as Sounds Like Comics Podcast.
You've been listening to Luke and Jay, the guys from Sounds Like Comics. See you soon.